There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Welcome to the Off Menu Podcast, shaking up the champagne of conversation, taking the sharp knife of humour, whipping it along the top of the champagne, taking off the cork of bad times and pouring ourselves a nice bubbly glass of podcast.
Celebrate good times, come on.
Boop, boop.
That said, Gamble, I'm James Acaster. We own a dream restaurant and we invite a guest in every single week and ask them their favourite ever starter, main course, dessert, side dish and drink. Not in that order. And this week, our guest is Jimmy Famarewa.
Yes, a wonderful food critic, brilliant writer. You've seen him as a judge on MasterChef, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Jimmy has a new book out.
Settlers, Journeys Through the Food, Faith and Culture of Black African London. That is out now, and we will ask Jimmy about it during the podcast
We will. But I can't wait for this menu, James.
This is exciting. If you are not listening to this episode with a pen and paper, you probably should, so that you can write down all the recommendations. Surely this guy is going to have them coming up the wazoo.
He knows his stuff. His wazoo is overflowing with recs.
Yeah, you would imagine.
Yes.
So I'm quite excited to hear all these recommendations.
Is that how wazoos work? Does so much stuff in the wazoo that it starts to spill out?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think that makes the sound wazoo as it all comes
wazoo.
Out. Yeah, yeah. Wazoo, yeah, you can.
Wazoo, yeah, you can.
Yeah. But hey, listen, we love Jimmy Famarewa, but if Jimmy says the secret ingredient, an ingredient which we have deemed to be unacceptable, we will be forced to kick him out of the dream restaurant.
And this week, the secret ingredient is cauliflower rice. Can't see Jimmy saying this.
Surely he wouldn't say cauliflower rice. I only know about cauliflower rice because I saw Ed do a routine about...
A whole show, really.
...about it when it was a fad, about having a grater cauliflower and how long that takes.
Yes.
So basically, someone decided that rice wasn't good for you.
Yeah.
And people started coming up with alternatives.
And you'd use that to make pizza bases and stuff.
Yeah.
Horrid.
Just using cauliflower in the worst ways possible.
Yeah.
Hopefully. I mean, Jimmy surely isn't going to say it, but like...
Unless there's some new, brilliant, trendy, high-end restaurant that's using cauliflower rice in an amazing way. You know, we'll be happy to hear about that and we're excited, but that will be the last thing he says on the Off Menu podcast.
Yeah, we'll have to kick him out. Yeah. So, fingers crossed that won't happen.
And that suggestion came from Hannah Sinclair.
Hannah Sinclair, she just don't care.
Apart from if it's cauliflower rice.
Yeah, then she cares. She's got an opinion on that.
Hannah Sinclair really do care.
Yeah, Hannah Sinclair, Hannah do care.
This is the off-menu menu of Jimmy Famarewa. Welcome, Jimmy, to the Dream Restaurant.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome, Jimmy Famarewa, to the Dream Restaurant. We've been expecting you for some time.
Oh, wow, it's happening. It's really happening. It's great to be here.
I was happy with my energy then.
Yeah, it was good energy, actually.
Yeah, I think it was really good.
Yeah. Well done you, man.
I am impressed that this genie pronounced my name so well as well, to be honest.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Well, he's been practicing it because it plays perfectly into his speech impediment.
Well, it plays havoc with my
speech. Right. Like it was like I deliberately...
I can use soft R's a lot of the time. So an R and a W together quite quickly means that... Whatever, I'm taking a run up to that and being okay.
Just a load of hazards.
I've really got to focus.
Imagine if I reveal at this point, it's not even my real name. It's just been a really long, slow burn bit to get to this point and wind you up. Like, Jimmy Smith, weirdly.
It's not often we get a food critic in the Dream Restaurant.
Is it not?
No, the third one.
Really?
Yeah. In like however many.
I guess that is.
Yeah. 5 years, over 200 episodes recorded.
Yeah.
Wow.
Always nerve wracking. But then because you're picking the stuff in the dream restaurant, hopefully you won't be too critical of the.
My own choices. Yeah. That would really play to type if I was like, oh, really obvious. Like just kind of, you know, almost doing my own annotations.
Yeah.
But no, it's lovely to be here.
But you're one of the more positive ones.
Yeah. I think that. Yeah. People do say that. Like someone was like waiting to get the train the other day, and this woman was like, I love how kind you are. I was like, yeah, I don't know if that's what they want from me, but I do try to be. I think it would be disingenuous if I was like some kind of like cackling, like villainous person, because I guess I'm sort of quite a genial, positive person in real life. So yeah, probably, I probably wouldn't be able to keep it up if I was like, you know, being really out of order. But yeah.
Especially if you're like friendly to everyone when you go into the restaurant and then they read a bad review and they're like, he seemed so happy when he was here.
Well, there is always an element of that. Like you kind of, and I guess everyone has this when they go to a restaurant and it's like, how is it going? And it's like, how honest are you to that question? Like they don't want you to be honest. It's like being asked, how are you? Isn't it? Like, you know, it's just kind of like, and so, yeah, I am always conscious of that, that you don't want to seem like you're just like being like duplicitous and like, yeah, this is great. And then you're just like ripping them to shreds like afterwards. But yeah, like you must find this, and you know, like when you're kind of, you know, we're all both kind of jamming our faces with food on TV when you're on British Menu. And
I get
British
to be the positive one though, I'm not the food professional, so I get to absolutely just gobble it all up. And then I try not to be mean, because also they're all brilliant professional chefs.
So
the base
that.
Level is excellent.
Yeah.
And then it works, it's from there really. So yeah, I have a great time doing it, but I eat everything.
Do you not? You don't pace yourself?
No, God, no.
Yeah, I always intend to pace myself, and you're like, right, we've got a big day of eating here.
Yeah.
Let's not go crazy. And then suddenly, if it's really delicious, you can't stop yourself. Like, how do you stop yourself? And also, the hunger kind of comes in strange bursts, doesn't it? Because sometimes you'll just have like tiny little portions of things, and then quite a big pudding will come out and you'll just like gorge yourself mad.
It's a different stomach.
It's exactly. The pudding stomach, of course. I'm still not great at that. And it's always a strange thing to have got to the end of one of those days and you're sort of like reeling and you've been eating this amazing, complex, sophisticated, interesting food. And I do have like at the end of the day, quite, you know, sometimes it'll just be like a pronounced craving for like a blueberry muffin from Starbucks or something like that. Like I sort of want to like return back to normality and like
I always think MasterChef is even more nerve-wracking as from like a judge perspective for you guys, because you've got to watch them bring it through the door and then bring it to the table, which terrifies me every time I see that. They're like shaking and bringing over the plate.
It is strange, and I guess that comes back to the balance of, you know, being positive and trying to be kind and I just always try to like actually remember that it is just like a person, like all the mechanics of TV, obviously you're there to be critical to a degree, and you're there to sort of like have a sort of bar of, you know, excellence or whatever it may be, but yeah, when people come in, quite often they've got like, you know, an ice pack on from where they've burnt their hand. Yeah. Like they're literally like trembling, covered in like stains of food and stuff. And it's like, you just sort of want to just be like, it's okay. You're going to be all right. But yeah, that is kind of, it is pretty brutal. And judging someone face to face, a very different thing. Like I think, you know, to go back to our point about the reviews, like I definitely had that experience of like when someone brings their food up to you, and you sort of say something even mildly negative about the presentation, their just faces just drop. And it is like, it's pretty, it's pretty tough. But I don't know, I think everybody, it's strange, isn't it? We all watch those shows because we want people to be kind of like judged in a certain way. But yeah, I think there's a line, isn't there?
I can just leave that to Tom Kerridge.
Leave it to Kerridge.
Just like, you just get to be like, that was great. Can I have another? Yeah. Just
he loves
it. Any word from Ed? He's just licking his plate. He's fine. He's just, It can be weird because I think sometimes, and especially when I first started being a critic, like written reviews, you think of criticism as being like, you know, what's his name, Anton Ego in Ratatouille, and that to be a good critic is to be exceptionally harsh. But I wonder if maybe sort of post-pandemic as well, that's kind of like fading away a little bit, and the sort of panto villainy is not really what people want. But you need to kind of, I don't know, people do kind of like seeing somebody, people like the catastrophe and things going wrong, the jeopardy, the peril, those things. And we kind of need to sort of gesture towards that a little bit sometimes.
And I think often that the reviewer nowadays becomes the thing as well, like a product in and of themselves that they're.
Yeah.
And so then they have to have a persona. And I think a lot of the time it's easier just to be the mean one who winds everyone up and people get annoyed about.
It's more fun to be a villain, right?
Yeah. Oh, massively, yeah. It feels like the thing that people think of when they think of critics, right? It's like that you're devastating and that you come in and, you know, the Imperial March is playing as you walk in. It's like, come on, I'm going to really sort of kick the shit out of this souffle. But quite often you just maintaining a sense of like proportion, like levity. But then, we all do sit there at home, don't we? And we're like, you know, we could literally be arm in like a bag of crisps or whatever and like have just like ordered a Deliveroo. And we're like, oh, he's messed it up. Oh, look at that. Yeah, the sauce is a bit thin, isn't it? A bit thin. Yeah. Oh, no, he's forgotten it. Like, it's kind of part of it, isn't it? That you can be the kind of armchair expert in that way. But it's good fun. It's such a, I don't know about you, Ed, but it's such an absurd thing to be doing, isn't it? Like, to be just like...
Such a lucky thing to be doing, like... Yeah. Eating like fantastic food and going I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, more please.
I've only ever been to the banquet and you have to write down your favourite dish at the end. Of course, there's loads of people there and, you know, you go around the table and no one's written the same thing a lot of the time. And you're like, oh yeah, it's not actually that one is the best.
Yeah.
It's just down to everyone going their individual thing.
Yeah.
And critics are just better at writing.
Yeah.
Just know more words than describe food than we do.
Yeah. I think it's a fair point, but I think that there is that thing of you get to almost like set the standard in some ways. And I think sometimes if I'm writing a review or if I'm describing something on MasterChef and I've not necessarily liked it, and I'm aware that that's quite subjective, but it is almost like you are a kind of like, I don't know, food lawyer or something. You're having to like convince other people that like you need to make a convincing argument basically. Yeah. So that even if people disagree with you, they can kind of see where you're coming from. And you're right. Like it's so, so subjective. And so, it is all about like who can convince the other person. But I've definitely had it where I've been like, that's amazing. And then the other critic's like, that is terrible. And I think like, you know, particularly like being relatively new to this world, like as I was like a few years back, you kind of are a bit like questioning maybe like what you think and you don't want to get things wrong. But I think you sort of come to realise that, you know, your perspective and your like approach to things has like value, doesn't it? And I think that that is kind of like a really sort of positive thing. And I think you can see it in the way that these shows are cast. There's different sorts of chefs, different sorts of cuisine, and there's a kind of a broader span of opinions as well, and it's not just like this isn't fancy French food, so therefore it's terrible. Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
Also, speaking of writing, you got your new book out, Settlers.
Yes, yeah.
Journey through the food, faith, and culture of Black African London.
Yes, so it's not completely about food, but there's a lot of food in there, and it's kind of a bit of a memoir, bit of social history, and it's kind of like about the sort of broad culture that raised me really, and sort of that I grew up in, Nigerian background, but then also there's a lot of crossover with people of Ghanaian heritage, people of Sierra Leonean, people of like other parts across the African continent. And so I just kind of like, it's split up into different chapters, like some looking at food, some looking at things like religion, some looking at education, and I kind of tell a little bit of my own story and experience of that specific world, and like, you know, the importance that faith held in like my mum's eyes as I was growing up and things like that. And I kind of just join the dots and contextualize it, like go back through history, a lot of research. I mean, I wish I'd picked something more straightforward. I definitely thought that midway through writing it. But no, I think also what I also wanted it to feel like was quite like alive and quite like fun and, you know, vibrant and like reflect. Like, you know, we've all, I think if you live in any kind of like, I mean, you could say like major city around the world, but certainly in the UK and certainly in London, there's African communities that we've all kind of seen and like, oh, that bingo hall is now like a Pentecostal church. Like, that's interesting. And you go like somewhere like Ridley Road Market and you kind of get that kind of explosion of like colour and life and, you know, the different things that are being sold there. And you think, oh, what are the roots of that? And there's all these fascinating little kind of historical nuggets that I kind of, you know, sought out. I talked about my own experience of them and I just kind of try to like join the dots in a hopefully quite entertaining way.
It is a thing about how positive you are. I was noticing it while you were talking. You smile while you talk, no matter what you're talking about. I was like, I don't think I ever do that.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, maybe that's
you
it.
Don't. Yeah.
Yeah, the opposite, actually. Yeah. Yeah. Telling like a really like positive story and scowling.
And I was listening to what you were saying.
Yeah.
But I was thinking.
But it's just the smile as well.
He's such a happy guy. Yeah.
Great. Just trying to like apply it to like if I was like a policeman or something. Just grinning. And I'm afraid we are going to have to arrest you.
Okay, Officer Jimmy.
Yeah, straight away.
Will you talk to me in the car on the way to the station?
Don't worry, I'll keep grinning. Maybe that is a bit of a cultural thing as well. Like, I think of like my mum, who is like a real formidable character, like, you know, tiny, very driven woman. But she's also like hilarious as well and like, you know, sort of like piss taking is kind of like our like family love language or whatever. Like it is that, it is kind of in there where kind of, you know, maybe part of it does come from like relatively like difficult circumstances at times and immigrants and you're sort of struggling a little bit, but there is always this kind of life and not taking things too seriously and sort of like, you know, having a little bit of a grin on your face. Yeah. But yeah, like, yeah, maybe it is one of those things that I've kind of probably, it's probably MasterChef that's just made me be like, if I just keep smiling, they won't hear me telling them that they're potatoes are under season.
Well, we always start with still or sparkling water.
I'm going to go sparkling.
Okay.
And I always think like, because obviously I go to a lot of restaurants in my job, and people are always like, still or sparkling. And I'm a bit of a flitter, really. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll have sparkling. But I do like sparkling because it feels like a little treat, like a little bit of fun, little fun sort of party bubbles and all that. And yeah, water is like an interesting one because I will normally just say tap, to be honest, like very pointedly. And then you worry that the person you're with is like, oh, got ourselves a cheapskate. Like, you know, there is that thing, isn't there? It feels weirdly loaded. And I don't know if you've had this at certain restaurants where you say tap and it's almost like they hoard the tap water. They keep it away from you. You don't get a bottle for yourself. Like, it's like they want to shame you into like...
You just get a tiny little glass.
Yeah. And they're just like, tap. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, you're not getting the jug yourself. No. We're going to like, yeah. So yeah, but I think sparkling, yeah, like bit of ice, bit of lemon in there sometimes as well. Or just like, yeah, it feels in its own way like the kind of thing that I wouldn't necessarily always have in at home, whereas still water is, you know...
You've got it coming out of the taps.
Got it coming out the taps, mate. Yeah. So yeah, it feels like a treat, puts you in that kind of mindset, that little bit of effervescence. Yeah.
Do you think, because I think when I'm judging Great British Menu, I will have sparkling water quite often. I feel like it's more of a palate cleanser in between different people's dishes.
Yes, that's a very good point.
It clears the mouth. It cleans the mouth.
Yeah, the sort of carbonated quality just kind of, probably is something in that. Yeah, but I don't know about you, I glug a lot of water on those days as well, like, you know, because they're always topping up your glass.
The salt they're putting in that food, man.
Yeah. Chefs. And all the butter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's chefs is crazy, the amount of salt.
But I'm pro salt. Oh, massively pro salt.
I'm pro salt, don't get me wrong.
But if you didn't have the water, you'd be screwed.
Yeah.
If I'm really sort of given the choice, if I really think about it, I'll kind of have whatever's there. But yeah, fizzy. Baby.
Wouldn't it be? Problems or bread. Problems or bread, Jimmy Famarewa. Problems or bread.
Oh, wow. Immaculate pronunciation again.
While having to do the poppadoms or bread.
While having to do the poppadoms or bread.
You did it.
I know. I felt now
it's my finest hour.
That's done now. That was going to be the tense one.
Yeah.
And is there build up as well where it's kind of like, oh, James hadn't been talking for a while?
Yeah.
It's like...
No, this one I was like, I caught myself. As soon as I thought to myself, you're going to have to do your popcorn onto a bread soon, I thought, just do it straight away. Do it right now.
I think I know. I don't know if I should say it. Well, I think he basically said at the time that, like, Jamie Oliver, who uh-huh. I kind of know a bit, that he was... The Poppadoms or bread was a moment for him, as an experience as well. Mm. Like, maybe the genie that he kind of was not prepared for Poppadoms or bread. Maybe.
Yeah,
did you even ask him? Yeah, terrified.
Well, he was prepared.
He was
actually.
Prepared because he chose Poppadoms, and then some people, because we recorded at his place, and some people brought in a selection of different.
Oh
Poppadoms.
My God! Yeah. Wow. Well, I've not got anything in my bag, I'm afraid, to present to you. But to return to the question, it's got to be Poppadoms. It's got to be Poppadoms. Yeah, I feel almost similarly to the sparkling water thing. There is a feeling of, I don't know, like, it's special. Like, mm-hmm. bread is great. Obviously, sourdough is on every restaurant menu mm-hmm. with a kind of fancy whipped butter next to it. I'm seeing a lot of... There's a lot of, like, glazed dinner rolls at the moment as well.
Is that the new? That's the new
it's
bread
the new
coming
thing,
through.
Mate. Yeah, just a little. That's why you got me here now. Mainly for sort of, you know, yeah, bread forecasting.
Is there certain stuff that you just get very tired of where you're like, I swear to God, if they've got truffle on this again on this menu?
Yeah, it does. It does happen where, and I think actually. It can probably seem quite unfair to, like, restaurateurs, like, they, you know, there are these things that become mm-hmm. real obsessions of chefs, and then, like, you know, people like me that write about food just kind of lose it out of all proportion because there's, like, another, like, wild garlic mayo, like, you know, and there is a lot of, but I guess it's like anything, isn't it? There's trends and mm-hmm. there's things that really bubble up, and then suddenly everyone will be like, absolutely not, mate. And, like, you know, we only need to look back through, like, food history or recent food history to see. But, yeah, it can just get a little bit much at times, yeah.
When do you think popping candy is going to be over? I think I talked about this on, like, the first episode of the podcast.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, they do love it, don't they?
Popping candy. And every time you see someone on a TV show put popping candy in something, someone will eat it and go, oh, this chef's got such a sense of humour. They don't. Talking about
the chef needs to grow up.
Yeah,
yeah. There's a whole family of those, though, aren't there? Where it's kind of like nostalgia. But yeah, Poppadoms, absolutely Poppadoms. Yeah, I just think there's just something very fun about them, and I always feel like when we order, like, an Indian takeaway, I've got a weirdly specific thing. Like, we'll have the Poppadoms at the start, but I like if there's a few left afterwards, just as a little, you know, when you finish, just to kind of, just to pick at the end, like, you know, that's kind of part of it. And there's just a few little shards to, like, kicking about, just something to do with your hands. Definitely Poppadoms, all the dips, mango chutney, all that. Yeah.
Is there a place where, like, does the best Poppadoms?
Yes, there's a couple that I can think of at sort of both ends of the spectrum. So there's one near me in Southeast London, Babur, got to shout them out. Absolutely legendary Indian restaurant. It's been going like over 30 years now. And their Poppadoms are great. Really good mango chutney with, like, proper big pieces of mango in it, bit of spice in it. Not that real kind of gloopy synthetic, which has its place, to be fair. Like, I've definitely had it with my friends where... And this, I don't know, this was like a bit of a light bulb moment because they were like, oh, yeah, I want to go for a curry. And I'm suggesting all these, like, oh, yeah, let's go to Gunpowder. Let's go to, like, you know, all these restaurants that are kind of contemporary takes on a specific region or whatever. But they absolutely wanted the old school, very kind of like basic. And it's kind of, and I feel like, those memories and those associations are so, like, powerful for people that they don't really want it mucked around with. Yeah. And, like, there's a restaurant chapter in Settlers, actually, where I talk about, you know, the increased prominence of West African-influenced food and African-influenced food and that authenticity question. And I do think, yeah, we all have these things where we just don't want it mucked around with, and people have it with things like fish and chips or whatever. It's like, no, I do not want it elevated. I want it slightly rubbish. Like, yeah, well, I'm used to.
Because there's a few of those restaurants now in London that are like West African influenced fine dining.
Yeah.
I absolutely love, but I didn't grow up with African food.
I
can imagine if you're like used to certain things, seeing this tiny little portion.
And then of course you've got the people that are perhaps more used to the food being like, where's the rest of it? What the hell's this? How much for a bottle of Guinness? Papa Dom's, Baba is really good. And then to sort of almost undercut what I've been saying, there's a place called Bibby in London, which is like really good, high-end Indian. And they do like these cheese Papa Dom's that are essentially giant quavers. So I would have like, you know, maybe half and half, maybe some babur ones and then some fancy cheese papad on the side as well.
I went to Bibi a few weeks ago. Oh phenomenal.
My God, it's really good, isn't it?
Oh, it's so good.
It's really good, isn't it? Really
great cocktails as well.
Good cocktails.
Yeah, it's
lovely.
Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. No, and that to me is like the best expression of that, because he's somebody that had worked on a lot of different restaurants, almost kind of like cooking other people's cuisines. And Bibi is him kind of applying that technique to this food that he clearly has like a real sort of like, you know, personal connection to as well. Like, it's really good. Would massively recommend.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into your dream menu proper. Very exciting.
Oh my God.
The dream starter.
Here we go. Dream starter. You must get so bored of people saying, can I slightly bend the rules? And like, I want to have a trio of small sandwiches, like slider sized. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, so it's still a starter, but there's three very specific sort of almost slider, two or three bite sized sandwiches that I want. One of them is the mackerel pita from Mangal 2, which they did it throughout the pandemic, like when it was kind of locked down, you could only do takeaway. And this is a restaurant in Dalston, like very acclaimed Turkish inspired restaurant run by the two sons of the original owner. So they've kind of modernized it. An amazing pillowy Turkish bread, beautifully charred piece of mackerel, a dill mayo in there as well. Outrageously good. And I think it's one of those things that you can't get it anymore. Like, they bring it back occasionally, but it's got that kind of scarcity specialness about it. So a little one of those, a little Dexter cheeseburger from the Plimsoll, which is another restaurant in London, in Finsbury Park. The greatest burger I've ever had, I think. Wow. Almost feels a little bit like it's got, and I could just be imagining this, but it's got like a wimpy quality to it. There's something quite nostalgic about the burger sauce in there as well. It's a smash burger, so it's got the crackly edges and just really gorgeous. And I think also as a reviewer, I reviewed the first kitchen residency that they did. And I remember the burger, we didn't even order it at first. And then we ordered it and I tried it. And I think it's almost like one of those things that reminds me, you know, to have the courage of your convictions, because I was like, I feel like this is like a crazily good burger. But what can be applied to like all sorts of different types of reviewing is you're doing it in this vacuum, like you don't know what other people think of it. And so it is this kind of leap of faith. And so I remember being like, oh no, I'm going to really make a big deal of that burger because I think it was delicious, but I'm not sure. And then it became this huge thing. And like, you know, like everyone was talking about the burger. So I think that's quite a nice one with a professional link. And then the final one is a teeny tiny KFC Zinger Tower Burger, which I've just got a very specific nostalgia for it. I used to work at various places in Bluewater, the giant shopping centre in Kent. And I'd work at like, I worked at Ted Baker for a little bit. And I've said previously in like in pieces of writing that it was like Glengarry Glen Ross or something. Like, they were all like, we've got to shift these store cards, and I kind of really hated it. But I would go for a KFC after. There's something about the hash brown and the cheese. There's just the sort of wrongness to it that I just absolutely love.
That would be my order.
Yeah.
I went for a stage when I was like, I don't know, 18, going to KFC every Friday with my friend Graham. Northampton KFC, they always had extreme sports or snowboarding on the TV, and we'd watch that. I'd always get a Zinger Tower burger meal, and it was a revelation that the cheese, the sauce,
yeah,
and the hash brown.
Yeah, is the sauce a kind of salsa-y type thing?
Yeah, or? And then obviously the actual chicken,
yeah,
a bit. It's got the zing.
Yeah, 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 yeah. There's heat in there. You're from. Getting the zing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're making it a bit spicier.
Don't forget the zing.
I never was going to order anything else.
Yeah, yeah. It just, I don't really know how they arrived at it. Like, you know, a lot of the fast food items, like, they're inspired by something, or, oh, it's kind of, it's the Texan one or whatever. But like,
or a knockoff from another.
Yeah,
fast
yeah.
Food
but
chain,
like,
yeah.
How did a hash brown and a slice of cheese and a spicy sauce get in there? Like, but yeah, those, and so, and I do feel like I really love like sort of mini burgers and like tiny kind of things that kind of invite you to eat quite a few of them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's almost like a challenge. Yeah. Like, you can just like have like a plate of them. But yeah, three of those three quite sort of personally meaningful.
Great. I'm so sandwiches. Happy that Mangal 2's got a shout out.
Yes.
Never been there.
And the Plimsoll. Man. I've still not been to the Plimsoll, but I went when it was four legs at the place
Compton Arms. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Really, really good. Yeah. Yeah. And the burger's the one thing, or one of a couple of things, that never leaves the menu and everything else changes. It's such a good burger. It's kind of hard to, I don't know, it's weird, isn't it? Because burgers are like pizza, where there's all these endless debates around the best. And again, to go back to our point, it can just be incredibly subjective, can't it? And people are like, that's not a good burger like this is. But yeah, I would defy anyone to try that burger and not just...
What's
like,
the bun?
It's like your standard glossy... Is it brioche? I'm pretty sure.
Brioche. Oh, no, I don't think it's. I don't think
out.
It's so sweet.
It's not. No, it's not mega sweet. But, it's not mega sweet.
Brioche buns in a burger.
And actually, it's not one of those ones that just kind of like disintegrates as well. It's like a good bun. Maybe it's more of a kind of potato roll.
I went through a stage with Mangal 2 where I'd go have a great meal, come back pissed, and book it for 3 weeks later.
That is a really good sign. I've definitely sat at certain restaurant tables, and particularly when it's very good and there's a bit of hype around it, maybe you're like, let's book again, like when you're at the table. Like, that is kind of really the ultimate sign. Or even if you don't book, like, I do think, and I don't know, like, when you're reviewing, you can get really, like, lost in the weeds of, like, is this good? Am I sure this is good? Like, everyone, like, because quite often the people I go with, they're having a great time.
Yeah.
They're, like, you know, drinking loads of wine. They're like, yeah, this is amazing. And so you have to be that kind of, I don't know, that sort of slightly cold, I was going to say shark-like, but maybe that's bad. But, yeah, you sort of have to be like, is this actually good? But one of the things that I always... come back to is, if you're already planning a return visit and trying to think of reasons or people that you'd love to take there, that's a pretty
good sign.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Are we seeing some loopholes for your dream main course?
I think my main course is hopefully not gonna need any loopholes or bits of rule bending. And having sort of been in a bit more of a restaurant space, I think this one's going to be a bit more linked to home. And it's a Nigerian dish, and it's basically stewed beans, which does not sound that appetizing. The Yoruba name for it is Ewa Riro. think I got that right. Like Nigerian Yoruba people, like sort of like
absolutely,
The menu back at the end. James is Ewa Riro is going to absolutely fuck him up.
Yeah. Jimmy Famare was Ewa Riro. You've got to call it that as well. Yeah, Kofo Famare was Ewa Riro. But yeah, it's amazing, and I think it's one of those things you probably would have. If you've eaten some West African food, or people that are listening, they would have encountered a dish like it.
Looking at it written down. The Billy has just written it down. I've just looked at it, glancing. Oh, I'm fucked. I'm absolutely fucked.
Oh, my God. It really is like I've done it deliberately. If you've had, as a Ghanaian dish, red, which is like a similar kind of bean dish, but it's really cooked down. Like you cook them in a pressure cooker. It's these beans and the stew in there. Tomato, pepper, stew, onions. It's normally got some heat going through it, some scotch bonnet, and you have that with fried plantain. And it is one of those things that probably because, and this is, you know, related to writing the book and seeking to like understand my culture, because, you know, having been born in this country and grown up here, I've got this kind of really powerful heritage and it's very present in my life, but it feels inaccessible in some ways, and you're constantly being told, oh, you're not really Nigerian, like, you know, but I think in terms of food it really manifests, because these are dishes that, I mean, I could maybe try them, but I just don't think I could get even close to like my mum cooking them. They're almost a bit like refried beans, like if you had like kind of like Mexican refried beans, and they've just got such like depth and, you know, waves of flavor. It's so comforting. It's basically like cooked down to like a mush. Not the most photogenic of dishes, but yeah, with kind of like caramelized, like sweetened fried plantain on the side as well. It is such a good combo. And it is the thing that I really, and you know, I guess through like the pandemic and stuff, we had an opportunity to all realize like, oh, well, I could never eat this dish again because the person, you know, my supplier, i.e. my mum, is not around. Like, you know, so yeah. It really clarified like what you really wanted, didn't it? And what you really sort of loved. I absolutely love it. It's such a simple dish, but one that I feel like, you know, dream restaurant, that'd be the kind of thing I'd go for. And maybe that tells its own story in terms of being a restaurant critic and having all these quite fancy foods. That's the thing I want.
Would you ever have it with jollof rice?
Well, yeah. So jollof would probably, if there was like a leaderboard of like, you know, the candidates for this main course, jollof would probably have been in the conversation. But some people do it. Like there is a kind of amazing chaos to like a Nigerian spread, like a buffet. Like my mum makes like a roast dinner and it's got like, you're like, hang on, none of this goes together, what the hell? Like, and there's an element of like, you know, there's potatoes, there's rice, there's plantain, there's like a few different types of meat, there's another kind of rice. So you could kind of do it. I wouldn't mix the two. And maybe that's one of my sort of weird rules, that I'm just like, I just want to like appreciate the beans. I want to have rice. Like jollof is a beautiful thing, but it's kind of like a separate thing. And yeah, jollof is crazy, the degree to which it's, you know, Ikoyi, which I mentioned in Settlers, they've got jollof rice on their menu and it's a 2-Michelin star, you know, restaurant now. It's kind of crazy to have something that you grew up eating suddenly become part of, you know, the kind of cultural conversation and stuff.
And it's a small portion as well.
It's a very small portion. Did you go? Have you been?
I've been a couple of times, I love it. I've not been to the new space, but I went a couple of times when I was in St. James's. I love
that. Because they do an amazing plantain dish as well, didn't they?
With the Scotch bonnet powder
like
on the
raspberry,
top.
I went
there. The first time we went there, there was a couple in there and they're very fancy couple. And then their childminder turned up halfway through with their 5-year-old daughter and dropped her off. And you just saw the waitress like start panicking. She came home, she was like, will she be eating anything? And they went, yeah, she'll have the same as us. She went, I don't know if she'll like it. I'm not sure we can make her anything else. She was like, no, bring her whatever. It's like tasting menu restaurant. It bought this plantain with, I mean, that stuff on the top is super fiery.
Yeah.
This kid immediately in tears. She went bright red.
Those beans, man, they are really, really good.
I mean, the main reason I bought jollof up and Ed and Ben know is because a long-running thing on the podcast has been debate as to what the best jollof rice is.
Oh, God, yeah.
Now, obviously, people usually say the one that they were brought up on. Yeah, I don't know whether they had. But you're a food critic, so we might get the definitive answer here. And I know that people will still be saying he's going to be biased and say Nigerian.
Just get to end the jollof wars right
here. But, you know, we've not had a food critic on before who can weigh in on this debate.
I genuinely do believe that all jollof is good. Like, I feel like the jostling and the arguing over different nations' jollof. But, you know, and again, I probably will be biased, but I do feel like, I wouldn't say it's better, but all I will say is that Nigerian jollof is the one that I know, the one that I've kind of, that I would cook, like the one that I've eaten the most. But I genuinely do feel that to kind of pit one against the other is to, you know, miss the point of jollof. It's all good, man. Yeah. Why are we arguing about, why are we arguing over which jollof's better? Yeah. We could be eating jollof. I think it's funny. It's a funny one, jollof rice, isn't it? Because I think everyone has a slightly different view of it, but it's fascinating to introduce it to people that haven't really eaten it all their lives. And they're like, this is amazing. Yeah. And so I feel like I just try to keep that in mind, really. But yeah, sorry to not be able to call the truce that you wanted on the jollof wars. Or I should have just said, Nigerians, the best. These guys don't know what they're talking about. That's not jollof. I think the thing that's probably true is that Nigerians are probably the loudest in terms of saying that our things are the best. That tracks as kind of our sort of behaviour.
I'd never really had jollof before, but there's a food stall in a market near me called Jollof Mama, and I went there and got a portion of that. I mean, that was a big portion.
Yeah.
Oh, I had the afternoon of my life sitting there in this huge bowl of jollof rice, and I just had to sit in the park for an hour and a half and let it all digest.
I think the other thing that's really fascinating about a lot of African restaurants in particular, and West African restaurants, is that you get given enough food, not just for that mealtime. There's such a sophisticated doggy bag operation that a lot of Nigerian restaurants, it's to feed you for the next few days and into the week. So I kind of love that attitude, and that feels really recognisable to me. I'd go around to my aunties and uncles or whatever, or I go to my mum's now, and it's my mum, I don't know anyone that drives around with stacks of Tupperware in their boot just in case, so that they can kind of divvy up the portions of rice that they're ferrying around most of Southeast London. But it's a beautiful thing. I don't know. I guess sometimes there can be a little bit of a frustration, not frustration, but it's almost a victim of its own success, in that it appears on every West African influence menu. It's the thing that everyone knows. It's the thing that everyone talks about. And so there are other dishes in the repertoire that other people don't necessarily know as much, that I don't even know as much. And I think it's that thing when something's almost a victim of its own success. Yeah. But I think it's a really exciting time for not just African influenced food, but Caribbean influenced food. And I think people are really discovering the links between the two, and there's a broader appreciation of different ways of doing things. And yeah, just kind of, it goes back to that point of maybe feeling there are rules of, this is what a restaurant critic sort of looks like or acts like or knows about, and they know all about fancy French food. And so it's kind of, it's really fun to be on MasterChef and someone's cooking something that's West African in origin, and I can sort of hold forth on it in a way that perhaps my other kind of co-judges aren't. And it's kind of, it's a really exciting time to be oh wow, that's really cool, this is something that I kind of know about, and it's becoming part of the kind of shared culture.
They did need that.
Your dream side dish, Jimmy.
Oh, wow. Okay. So this is returning a little bit to the maverick of the first dish. I'm going to keep it West African and Nigerian specifically, and I'm going to keep it quite spicy as well. I'm going to have some beef suya as my side dish. It's probably more of a snack or a starter, but it's definitely not a main. And I think because the main that I've chosen, the beans, it's quite kind of simple, it's quite restrained, there's no meat on it. And suya, for those that do not know, is a kind of addictively fiery barbecued beef that's kind of traditionally sold by the roadside and kind of
little kind of outdoor grills in Nigeria. It's Northern Nigerian in origin, and it's in this dry spice rub, which is called yaji specifically, or suya spice. And that's got peanuts in it. So it's kind of mixed with like ground peanuts with kind of dried pepper. It's like chili pepper. It's got some ginger in there. And it is like the most addictive thing you have ever had in your life. Genuinely, it's out of control. There's something about the combination of like sweet roasted peanuts and kind of quite intense heat with like charred strips of like a beef, or you can have it with chicken. You get it in newspaper when you go to, if you have it traditionally in like Nigeria, and it's kind of, you know, it's quite primal. You're ripping it out of the paper with your hands, a cold beer as well. And I think that'll be a good little matchup. And it's the sort of thing, it is one of my absolute favourite Nigerian dishes. And I think I write in the book that the first time I tried it actually was some that had been smuggled into the country by a relative who had like frozen it. I still don't really know how they did it. And frozen it, like in like a tin or something, like hidden it in their bag so that like escape detection, and then got it to the UK, and then it kind of defrosted, and then they sort of like gave it to us. And I mean, you know, the fact that I'm still eating this, like, yeah, it's, you know, like when it's kind of essentially been in someone's suitcase. But yeah, it's amazing. And it's a really, really good dish.
It sounds great.
Even if it hasn't been mulled into the country, it still tastes good.
Are there places you can get it in the UK?
Yeah, there's a really, really good, I think you can get it all over. And there's a place that delivers nationally, actually, called Alaji Suya, which I would massively recommend. They're in Peckham, and they've got a couple of locations, but they've got a main one in Peckham. And they're really, really good. They use really tender meat. Their yaji, their spice is like, they give you an extra little baggie of it for the hardcore. I would also recommend Chishiru, which is like quite an acclaimed restaurant that's in London by a chef called Joker Bakare. And she does like really nice bavette steak, like with the spicing on top. So that's like a little sort of like edging towards bouginess version of it, but it's still as delicious.
We were going to go there once.
Yeah.
Were we?
Yeah, before, I think it was before COVID.
Yeah.
We booked
in
it
Brixton.
To go. I think we were going to go there. And then everything
you should
got
go.
Shut.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
She's such a good cook. And like, it's funny, because I've eaten suya on TV shows and also like spicy dishes as well. And it is a weird thing, isn't it? Where I feel like I do like spice, but I don't know if it likes me as much as I like it. Like, there's a really growing body of evidence of me just like sweating and just looking like, what are you doing? Like, just like, you know, I don't know. Like, and it was funny, like growing up, because a lot of my friends would have that thing of like, wanting to get the hottest curry, and you know, when Nando's kind of arrived, and I'd be sort of like ribbed for like, oh, if I didn't go extra hot at Nando's. And I think growing up with food that could be quite hot and with like a lot of spice and stuff, I just didn't really understand that kind of real, oh God, you got to get the hottest one. It's good. Yeah. But I don't know. How are you guys with, are you spice,
I love it.
Spice
love
boys?
It. Absolutely yeah. love it, but I wouldn't, it's certainly not for any sort of masculine proof reasons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I genuinely love it. Like,
as long as the flavour's there.
Yeah.
And they're married together, brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Delicious. If there's no flavour and it's just really hot.
Yeah. Angry. Just kind of like a blunt heat. Yeah.
I like it to take me to the absolute edge.
Oh, man, yeah.
And when I start sweating and getting tingly.
Yeah,
tingly
yeah.
Head,
I think that's part of it, isn't it? It's almost like physical. Like, there's another other end of the spectrum in terms of cuisine, but Thai, there's a few, like Speedboat Bar, I don't know if you've been there.
We went, yeah.
Did you
that's another place I went, and then the next week I went back with him, because the one dish at Speedboat Bar where they were like, do you like hot food? I'm like, yes. And it came and it got me so close to the edge.
Oh, man.
But I know when I've gone over the edge because I start hiccuping.
Right.
And I just
started
to get hiccups.
Your,
the Chinese, Chinese sausage and the mustard green salad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
The prawn ceviche stuff there was off the chain.
Yeah.
I really want those again.
It's so...
And I remembered after... We were talking about them the other day and how much we liked the food there. And then I remembered the drink that I had that me and Jamie Dimitri ordered.
Yeah.
And it was like that... It was that beer.
Jelly beer.
Jelly beer.
Oh,
was what
yeah,
it potentially
yeah,
was
yeah.
Called, like a frozen beer
yes.
that had like ginger and honey in it.
Yeah.
Holy hell.
Oh, baby.
Like, that's a dangerous drink.
Yeah.
Gulping that down like it was juice.
I was all ready to be angry at that restaurant because it used to be the Taiwanese
yes.
place.
Yes. Yeah.
Which I loved.
Which the Bao guys did.
Yeah, which is like the most beautiful restaurant I've ever seen. But,
yeah. But Zoo, was it? Zoo?
Yeah, that's it, yeah. It was just a stunning meal.
Yeah.
But that is, everything is like
yeah. proper sort of pulse pounding. I think when you do it, you're like, because Plaza Khao Geng, the kind of precursor to that, which is in Arcade below Center Point. Mm-hmm. And that was my, like, you know, and they bring out little sort of, like afterwards you have these little like milk, like little, almost like little shots of like pink milk that are kind of meant to like tame the spice type thing. But you know, when you're just like, I want more, and people look at you and they're like, you sure you want more, mate?
You don't look well.
You sort of look like, I don't know if it's a good idea. Like, yeah. But yeah, it's so addictive. And yeah, like Suya definitely ticks that box for me. It's just such a, rush. It's kind of like, you know, to the point where there is a little bit of a thing in Nigeria, especially in like Nigerian culture, where it's a bit like, and my mum's a little bit like, what is in that stuff? Like, she finds it a little bit kind of, she's not sure
she's
about
suspicious.
It. She's suspicious. And there's all these rumours about various kind of, you know, I think that, I mean, I did write a piece about it. There's various rumours of like it being almost like a bit of a natural Viagra type thing.
Okay,
like
yeah.
there's kind of like weird sort of added things in there. So just be aware of that before you have stuff.
So where can you order this from?
Yeah. Also, those rumours are started by someone who was eating suya and got a boner, right? That's just like, that's the person who started that rumour.
Yeah, must be the suya.
So, natural Viagra, guys.
It's not that I'm
hard as a rock here.
Not that I'm an unstoppable pervert.
Yeah.
It was the suya. You didn't actually have any of the suya. What?
So this place in Peckham, do they deliver it? Like cooked, is it all done?
Yeah,
so it's almost like jerky. By the
there is one that's more jerky like, and that's called kilishi, and that's kind of dried, almost like a biltong, but with the kind of peanutty spice to it. The Peckham place, you can either get it like warm to go, or they do a version that you can like heat up at home, or they ship it like so far.
I'm
now.
Gonna do it.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah. Jay Rayner, my MasterChef colleague, I got him to go there, and he absolutely loved it. Like, parked up in his car outside eating suya with a little baggie of extra yaji, which I kind of really enjoyed that mental image of him just kind of. I think he might have been in a zip car, which makes it even funnier for some reason.
Is there any stress ever involved in that when you're a food critic and you recommend a place to another food critic?
Oh, God, yeah, massively. Yeah. And I think any recommendation, not just to, like, food critics, but you do, and you must feel it, mustn't you? And I think there's an element of, like, if they don't like this as well, maybe we're done. Like, you know, like, there is a strange thing, isn't there? You kind of, because it's such a great feeling when someone gets it and they get the same response. But I think we've all had that thing of, like, oh, God, you got to go there, or you hear, like, and they're like, we weren't sure, and they had a bad experience for whatever reason. But, yeah, there's definitely pronounced, like, if I recommended somewhere to, like, another food critic. But it's very, I don't know, it's rare that you'd kind of nudge someone to go somewhere. Like, it can be very, like, what did you think of that? Oh, you like that? Like, you know, like in a nice way, but there is that kind of slight caginess edging towards kind of competitiveness sometimes where it's kind of like you keep your cards quite close to your chest. You're not necessarily recommending places.
See, I'm the complete opposite. Whenever I recommend somewhere, I'll be like, it's the best meal I've ever had. So there's no way they're ever going to enjoy it as much as I said I enjoyed
it. Yeah, always good to build it up to like an absurd degree. So it's like,
I need Ed to send me a list of places. I need to go to some new places.
Yeah.
So if at some point, Ed, you could send me a list of recommendations.
So the perception would be that you're like eating out all the time, but you're not, right? Are you not?
Go through stages of it a lot, but like Ed is really good at finding new places, going there and like, you know, you can like describe a restaurant in London without saying the name and he'll know what it is. And, whereas like I basically have a handful of places whenever anyone asks me for recommendations, I'm like, here's five places, and they're all places that Ed told me about. and they tend to be the ones that, I end up going, like, there's about, I don't know, four places I really like local to me.
Yeah.
And I just tend to go to them on a bit of a loop. I need to break, I'm at the point now where I need to break out of that.
But I think that's good. As somebody that maybe doesn't, and maybe this is part of the job, because you're always kind of like moving ever forward and on to the next thing. Like, the ones that I really love and really cherish are the ones that you can always go back to, and kind of like, that's how you build up like proper love for a place, where you're like, oh, they've got that special on.
Yeah.
Oh, that tasted slightly different today. Oh, that was a bit hotter this week or whatever. And you kind of, and also that kind of certainty of like, oh my God, I'm in this restaurant, everything's going to be all right. Like, yeah. So yeah. I think there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Just going to the same places. So you're fine. Carry on.
Yeah, you'll be all right.
All right. But like, especially doing this pod, you hear loads of recommendations, you're like, I've got to go to this place. I can't remember all of it, but I remember that Ed said it to every single one of them, yep, I've been there. So I'm like, right, if Ed can send me a list of stuff, that'd be really useful.
Happy to.
Your dream drink, Jimmy.
Oh, my dream drink. Oh, it's a fascinating one, this. Do people mostly pick booze or do they not?
Yeah.
Does it tend to
There's
go,
a lot
do
of
they?
Booze, mostly.
I don't know if it's maybe part of the picking a real dish of my childhood as a main, or like that nostalgia. But I was just thinking soft drinks, like a lot of the time. The traditional obvious way to go to match up with that main and side would be a super malt, which is, I'm sure you've had previously, but it's a real obsession, particularly in West Africa. And it's weird because it's like Danish, like brewed in Denmark. Huh. And I think it was originally designed for like the armed forces in Nigeria, like Nigerian soldiers, to kind of, because it was a way to like quickly get them like B vitamins and kind of, like all this stuff. So it's slightly strange.
It's sort of like Viagra as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. That guy again is like, oh, careful of the super malt, guys. I've got a boner again. It's like, not sure if it's the things you're eating and drinking. But yeah, so that would be the obvious way to go. But I'm going to go for another soft drink, which I just kind of have a weird obsession with and love and a nostalgia for, and it is an Orangina, an ice cold Orangina. I don't know what it is. Like, I had a real sort of beloved uncle who sadly is no longer with us, but he would always get us like Orangina, and maybe it's the adverts, shake the bottle, wake the taste, was it, or something like that? The bottle.
Stop,
yeah,
trying,
I know.
Stop
yeah,
trying
yeah.
to pretend that
is
you
it,
don't exactly know what the
is
advert
it, is.
Is
it shake the bottle, wake the taste?
Is it what I say to myself every day?
My mantra. But
it's
yeah.
What the Viagra guy says.
Just something about an ice cold Orangina. The fact that it had the illusion in my mind, in my kind of youthful, like sort of 90s kid mind of like, oh, this is really fresh. It's got bits in it. And it's like, but obviously it's
bottle.
Like, yeah, and the bottle. Yeah, yeah, the
shape
bottle.
Like an orange, for God's sake.
Shape like an orange. This is really good for me. Oh, God.
Say it again. Say, shake the bottle, wait the taste.
Shake the bottle, wait the taste. Imagine if that was,
are you asking me to shake the bottle, wait the taste?
Calling the Orangina hotline.
So yeah, I love Orangina, and I kind of almost want to, like, I don't know, that, those specific circumstances where you're like desperate for like a drink, it's really hot, and then an ice cold Orangina. So I feel like that'd be a decent matchup with the mains.
See, interestingly, people do pick booze a lot of the time. You're our third episode of the day. No one's picked booze.
No one's picked booze today.
Yeah.
All picked soft drinks. All picked soft drinks that are in glass bottles.
Wow. Oh my God, what's going on?
And
it must be because it's a hot day.
It is a hot day.
Yeah, what I was hoping
You've got
for.
Us in this hammam as well. Just anything cold, really. Anything cold.
I was hoping for as well, because you were saying childhood thing, you'd picked a few things that were from Nigeria.
Yeah.
And today we've had someone picked Nigerian Fanta.
Oh, okay,
In a glass bottle. Someone picked Pepsi from, was it?
Uganda.
Uganda.
Wow,
in a
amazing,
glass bottle.
Amazing.
And I was like, come on. If this is three in a row in one day of African sodas in glass bottles,
sodas
this will be the weirdest hat trick we've ever had.
Really strange. Yeah, I mean, I do like Nigerian Fanta and all. African Fanta, as you'd probably call it.
Well, when we Googled it today, it was saying it's
Nigerian Fanta. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. I'll just own the kind of like Nigerian exceptionalism then. Our jollof is the best. And the Fanta is ours.
Ghanaian Fanta stinks.
Yeah. Get that out of here.
I'm not sure. Have we had Orangina?
Have you
before?
Had it?
Alex Horn. Of wow. Taskmaster chose Orangina as his water.
Of course he did.
Yeah.
Of course he did. Yeah. No, I love Orangina. Yeah, even like the name. And I've got to say, to go back to the Nigerian Fanta thing, I don't really do masses of like sweet drinks these days. Like, I just don't really, I don't know. I kind of find it fascinating, people that have a Diet Coke every day. Like, I didn't, like, no judgment, but I'm just a bit like, oh my God, like, yeah, like, I just can't really do it anymore. And the notion of drinking water in my childhood was like, what the hell are you doing? Why are you drinking water? Just like put some squash in it, for God's sake. Like, you know, I would never really drink water. And I feel like, you know, I don't know, that weird way where you kind of, I don't know, betray your younger self as you kind of grow older. Because I'm all about just water now, really, or like teas and coffees. And so, yeah, in terms of the dream restaurant and the dream meal, an Orangina would feel, there'd be something maybe slightly illicit about it, maybe even more so than booze, because, you know, there's obviously a lot of wine and drink around. Do you have wine on the Great British Menu?
No, only if we only have booze if the chef brings it with their dish.
Right,
so, like,
right.
Quite often the desserts will have like a cocktail with them. Or if they really work
that old classic.
Yeah,
and I've brought you a shot as well, guys.
Yeah.
Too.
Oh, it's like, that's a good idea. Or you do it like Spencer Metzger from the Ritz, who brought in like an 80 quid bottle of Bordeaux with the main course. Like, all right, yeah, this guy means business. A main course that got through to the banquet when it's the BBC who are in charge of the budget, and it was shit wine.
Tesco wine.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I feel like maybe the lack of a boozy option for my drink choice probably is related to work, because there is a lot of more wine and a cocktail maybe and whatever, and I think there's something quite nice about just having like kind of soft drink
especially to cut through the spice of the
I think that'll work. The other thing that was in the running, but I don't know if this would have really gone, is you mentioned Bao earlier, but their peanut milk.
Oh my God, I love it.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
I've not had this. I've really been to Bao, but not had the peanut milk.
Really, really
do
good.
Do they only do it in the cafe, or do they do it everywhere now?
I thought they did it in every one, but I could be wrong. Yeah. They might have shuffled the pack.
They definitely do it at the Bao cafe.
It's really good. And that would have been a nice little sort of echo of the peanuts in the suya as well. So, you know, that'd be my other option. And it's so good, because it's kind of a drink that's basically a sort of pre-pudding as well, isn't it? It's kind of like, this is really good stuff.
Now you're talking my language.
Yeah.
One of the best phrases in the English language. Pre-pudding. Well, let's get on to your dessert in that case.
Yeah.
I think we can allow... We let people have more than one drink in the past.
If you want
Orangina as your dream drink, but you want a peanut milk as the bridge between your main course and your pudding.
Oh my God.
You can have it.
I've just remembered that I was going to ask for more rule breaking at the end.
Yeah.
Hey, let's
see how we go.
Okay.
It'll be after the pudding. Because you let people have a coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on. And it's a very specific kind of coffee.
Yeah.
Okay. So my pudding, I would like a ice cream sundae, and I want it made with two very specific types of kind of soft serve ice cream. One is the toasted rice gelato from a place called Superiority Burger. Have you been there in New York? They've moved into bigger premises now, and it's a kind of vegetarian burger place run by a guy called Brooks Headley, who used to be in bands, like punk bands and stuff, and it's like, but worked as a pastry chef. Amazing, tiny little place, real sort of like punk spirit to it. They'd have all these kind of changing veg-based dishes, and also like the greatest gelato you've ever had in your life. I went to New York in 2019, went there, and I had this toasted rice one that was just unbelievable. It was like rice crispy milk, like cereal milk, but kind of, you know, even better than that sounds. So that was really good. So with that, in my ice cream sundae, and then also a Wendy's Frosty, which I like. America was like a really
formative, like, I don't know, like place, or like I would go there quite a lot as a kid because I've got family, like uncles and aunties dotted around like the States, like in places like Miami and places like that. And so I really remember going to America and just, I was obsessed with America as a lot of kind of 90s children were. And I think maybe even more so as a kind of immigrant kid, you're sort of like, oh, wow, like America's so cool. And having relatives in America was this really big thing. And it just completely lived up to like my insane building it up and promise. And I just really remember going to Wendy's and it's like, oh my God, their burgers are square. Like, I, like what? Like, it just does nothing to it. But it's like, they're square burgers. And having a Frosty, which I was always fascinated that there wasn't a flavour. It was just the Frosty was the Frosty. And I think it's a bit of chocolate and a bit of vanilla. Slightly off-putting, almost like off grey colour, but just so nice, so sort of creamy and like delicate. So I'd have an ice cream sundae with those two mixed in. And I just love a sundae. I love the idea of...
Got sauce or cream?
Yeah, I'm going to have some sauce. I'm going to have some sort of like hot fudge sauce maybe on top. And then maybe we'll crumble a bit of the Marksman's brown butter custard tart in there. We will have a little bit of a Happy Endings ice cream sundae crumbled in there. The multi one, which I think is like genuinely one of the most perfect kind of puddings that you can get. So yeah, a little bit of crunch and then these two soft serve ice creams and then just roll over and fall asleep.
Yeah. Sounds like a good sundae. I mean, also, that's the second self-designed sundae we've had today.
Oh, really? What is going on today?
It's mad today.
And the same person shouted out the Frosty.
Did they?
Yeah. Which is the first time that's ever... We've never had it before.
Never on the podcast. Mentioned.
Two in a row. He's probably still out there.
He was like, say Frosty. And then loads of R's next to W's as well.
Just chuck them in as much as you can.
Wendy's Frosty. Yeah, there's some W's and R's flying around in that.
I mean, it's not my biggest worry at the minute. On this menu. I mean, it sounds delicious. And nicely Happy Endings get a shout out. That is, I had that one, that ice cream sandwich just recently.
I think we had to forcibly stop ourselves from buying them. Yeah. Like me and my wife. You know, when you're just a bit like, this is getting a little bit out of hand. You both independently bring one home as a treat.
I got
Happy Endings ice cream. She's like, I got them too. But they're so good. They're all great. And Terry, who runs Happy Endings, is awesome. She's like a good thing as well. But I think it's amazing that you can just, obviously in quite fancy shops, but you can just buy that in a shop, like something that kind of perfect and beautifully put together. They're really good.
Yeah. They got stand in Victoria Park and sometimes I go on walks and then end up in Victoria Park and I find myself naturally walking towards it, hoping it's going to be open, but then any time it's closed, I always think, that's for the best.
Need to be sort of saved from yourself. Had one in ages because I think it did just get a little bit out of hand where we were having them like really, really regularly. Just like when you have to forcibly ban yourself from having something, like it's, I don't know, is it good? Is it bad?
It's a compliment to them.
I think it is. I'm all about puddings. It's a strange thing. And this is kind of a bit of a food world thing where everyone's kind of quite often always tripping over themselves to tell you how little of a sweet tooth they've got and how much they don't really like puddings. And it's always seen as this like mark of sophistication, isn't it? Like, it's like, oh, I don't really like puddings. It's like, come on. Puddings are great. Come on.
A bunch of dickheads, man. You know, all that, I don't have a sweet tooth. And you're right. Every time that we've had that phrase said many times in this podcast, I don't have a sweet tooth. And they always say it like, that's a good thing or something about them. Or that makes them interesting. That make you interesting. Most people say it who come on here. So you're not. More exciting if you're an adult who still goes out the way to have an ice cream sandwich.
Yeah.
Who happens to go on a walk to Victoria Park every single day.
To the same spot. Yeah.
My feet go where they go. I don't know.
Oh, back here again. Okay.
There you go. It's closed. I'll try and jimmy open the shutters and see if I can crawl in.
What? But yeah.
Jimmy does that so much.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I say I had to forcibly stop myself from buying them. There was a bad scene with some jimmied open shutters.
That was a restraining
order.
Oh, yeah, you have a coffee order at the end of this.
Oh, yes, my coffee order. So the coffee that I'm going to get, and I wonder if you've had this, it's from a place called Forts of Wynn, which is in South London, Camberwell.
Benito's got his head in his hands. He's loves it so much,
and
clearly.
And it is the Custardo.
Is it that? Is that what you thought it was going to say, Benito? The Custardo? Yes, he says
oh,
yes.
Oh, my God. It is a shot of espresso with... They make their own custard, basically. Yeah. Like, you know, sort of like a frozen custard type thing. And it is unbelievable. Oh, it is out of control. The sort of the combo of like amazing, you know, like I always quite like the thought of like an affogato, and I think, oh yeah, like, you know, to go back to that idea of, oh no, I don't really do puddings. Like it feels a little bit like the kind of, you know, interesting artist choice, like, oh, an affogato. But they always slightly disappoint me, but a custardo feels like what an affogato should be. Mm. Like it's like amazingly creamy, sweet, rounded custard with this like beautiful, intense shot of coffee in it. And it's so nice. It almost tastes like eggnog or something like that. And yeah, so that'll be my little...
Oh, well, we're going there now.
Yeah, fairly
Forts of Wynn. It's absolutely inspired.
What's it called?
Forts of Wynn. Forts of Wynn's up on the roof, which is very good. But yeah, Forts of Wynn, which is now in Camberwell, used to be in Peckham, and a Custardo there. One of their Custardos, just to kind of cap this insane meal. For a man that already eats too much. I suppose I must be, but sometimes I'm like, am I a good eater? Like I'll be midway through like a meal and I'll be like, I'm already full. And I'm like, I should probably be a better eater than this.
Yeah, but it's what you do at that point that makes you a good eater or not.
That's true. That's true.
Some people stop.
Yeah, some people would stop. Yeah. Sure. Yeah, some people would stop.
You can't stop.
You've
got a sundae and a Custardo to have.
But yeah, Custardo, oh, so good.
Well, I'll read your menu back to you now, see how you feel about it. You like sparkling water, Poppadoms or veg. You would like half from Baba Poppadoms and half from Bibby.
Yes.
Cheese Poppadoms with all the dips.
Yes.
Starter, a trio of small sandwiches. You want the mackerel from Mango 2, the Dexter cheeseburger from the Plimsoll, and a KFC Zinger Tower burger, all nice and small slider size. Yes. Main, Iwariro. How was that?
Yeah, bang on.
I said that right?
Iwariro, yeah.
With caramelized
Let's hear it again.
Iwariro.
Yeah, and it's Kofo Famarewa's Iwariro.
What's her first name?
Kofo.
Kofo Famarewa's Coffee Famarewa's was Iwariro. Oh, fucking hell. That's genuinely hard. I'm not doing this for laughs. Coffee Famarewa's Iwariro.
Yeah.
Hey! I don't know. Carrot with caramelized plantain.
That was good.
Side dish, beef suya. Drink, ice cold orangina, and then a peanut milk from Bao to bridge over into our dessert, which is an ice cream sundae and has toasted rice gelato from Superiority Burger, Wendy's Frosty, then hot fudge sauce, a Marksman brown butter custard tart crumbled over it, and Happy Endings ice cream sandwich, the malted one, jammed in there. And then at the end of all that, the Custardo from Forza Wynn.
Yes, amazing.
That's pretty outstanding.
Oh,
menu.
My God.
That is great. I mean,
I'm really pleased with
I'm
that.
Absolutely, definitely having the Custardo.
We got that.
But I really want beef suya. I've never had that before.
Yeah.
I mean, hearing that back, are you thinking like, yes, what a night that would be.
Yeah, I'm pretty pleased with that. I've got to say, you know, thank you for allowing me the raw bend on the starters. I can even see those little sandwiches. You know what I mean? Yeah. I can like really envisage it, and I just think it would be a great way to kick it all off.
Maybe organise like a fundraising charity dinner or something where you get all those guys in to make little sandwich versions.
Stuff. Yeah, so what have you got us here for, Jimmy? Right. Just going to do them really small, all right?
Can Who are we raising money for? I don't know yet.
Yeah, we'll work that out. No, I'm really, really pleased with that. Thank you for indulging me. That was, oh my God, that's made me quite hungry. Maybe I am a good eater after all.
Well, we expect a good review.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Thank you.
There there we are. As expected, brilliant episode, brilliant menu. Yeah. Lovely man.
Benito is so happy that the Costado got a shout out. It's nice to see Benito as happy as this after an episode.
Yeah, never happened before.
Never happened that it's been... never been happy after an episode, but also never has there been a shout out for something that he loves this much.
Benito's face after every episode is very much the face of a man who's thinking, how am I supposed to edit that shit?
Yeah, he's figuring out in his head how many of these do I have to make, which means I won't have to make them anymore. but there you go. I mean, also, thank you to Jimmy for all your food recommendations, but also for not saying cauliflower rice.
Thank the Lord.
Yeah, we appreciate that. It means we didn't have to kick him out. And we can, once again, plug Settlers by Jimmy Famarewa, Journeys Through Food, Faith and Culture of Black African London. That is out now in paperback.
It's out now in paperback.
That means he's already slammed it. He's already knocked it out the park and hardback. Bloomsbury Continuum.
So go and get that. Give it a read. I certainly am. Thank you very much for listening.
Or audiobook.
Thank you very much for listening to the Off Menu Podcast. We will see you again next week.
Yumma, yumma, yumma.
Rub, rub, rub.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, it's Rob Orton here. Now, I've got a podcast called the Rob Orton Daily Podcast. It's a short poem or story or a musing on a particular subject every single day. What if you commissioned Picasso to paint your house and he just painted it white? Would you be annoyed? Wouldn't it be good if you could pour Miracle-Grow onto other things, such as pizzas? Have you ever thought about what a beach might be like if it was made from digestive biscuits? Have you ever tried to cry about something you're not thinking about? If you would like to listen to a daily podcast that includes subjects I've mentioned there, then please listen to the Rob Orton Daily Podcast.